This is the Fantastic Books Podcast,
the fantasy and sci-fi book review podcast for fantasy fanatics, book nerds, and lovers of lore and stories.
Covering some of the most loved fantasy series as well as brand new novels.
With your hosts, Anna
and Sam. Let's see what we're reading this week. Welcome back, fantastic listeners. This is Sam.
And Anna.
And this week, we are covering the finale of Mistborn, The Final Empire by Brandon Sanderson.
We made it!
Almost a year to the date, too.
I know, I'm actually pretty impressed that we got this done in almost exactly a year. It's a pretty hefty book when you look at it.
Yeah, it's definitely a ton of plot, but we've just been so excited to cover it that we've definitely made the time to get these episodes out and fly through it.
Oh, and then I can finally finish the trilogy because I have so many questions.
All will be revealed.
A lot's revealed in these two chapters, I will say. Chapter 38 and the epilogue do pay off. We get the Brandon Sanderson avalanche culmination, but we also get explanation in the epilogue that I think really ties the story together. And I think that's one thing that's cool about Mistborn is that it can be a standalone book. And I think it's a good recommendation if I'm recommending books to people who are just getting into fantasy. I think this is a good starting point one. It's got a good magic system. The characters are really intriguing and engaging, and the plot is pretty strong. And then if you're interested in more, like you and I obviously are, because we always are needling for more answers, you can
keep reading. There's always another secret.
You can keep reading the trilogy. But I also am impressed in the way that he wraps up part one of the trilogy as its own story.
I agree.
It's not like, here's the first third of a story. It's here's act one. It's complete. It's done. More will be later if you want it.
Definitely. And that's why I really enjoyed the trilogy as a whole, because Brandon Sanderson does his classic Sanderlanch, where you get a ton of action, an awesome amount of lore and secrets that are revealed at monumental times within the story, mm-hmm. both in book two and three. And it's just such a rewarding emotional and mental payoff for paying attention to so many clues and subplots. In that regard, I'm very excited to get your reactions as you conclude the trilogy.
I think that's why you and I like these books so much, is because, sorry, Patrick Rothfuss, but it's all the clues and the tidbits that we like picking apart in Name of the Wind, but we actually get an answer in this case. The books are completed. And I am intrigued to read more. I've got The Way of Kings sitting downstairs, and it's a tome, but I know that it ties into the lore in terms of how the magic and the Cosmere works for all of these books. So I'm intrigued to keep poking into the entire universe of Brandon Sanderson and see how all the pieces fit together.
Yeah, absolutely. That being said, with other books and authors to be covered this year in 2024, we are going to be starting our next mini-series, The Sapien Empire by
Nathan Ogloff.
We'll be covering episodes with him weekly.
Should be for the next 5 weeks. So if you are a sci-fi or any kind of person who likes Mad Max or dystopian fantasy, this is going to be right up your alley. We have not started reading it yet because we like to be able to make predictions as we go along, so you can follow along with us. And we've been tagging him in our social media if you're interested in following the author and finding his book as well. You can find that on any of our social media pages at Fantastic Books Pod.
Other than that, one final announcement for our lineup for this year. We will finally be covering Dragons of Autumn Twilight this year. And I am so excited to dive into a classic Dungeons & Dragons-based fantasy read. I think it'll be really just a good time, something that's a comfort. I'm looking forward to sharing that story with you all.
Yeah, we bumped it so we could cover Mistborn, but the time has come.
Yes.
We will be covering it. And then just a shameless little plug, don't forget to follow us on those social media channels I just mentioned at Fantastic Books Pod. I've been working on uploading all of our audio to YouTube. So if you have friends who listen to podcasts through YouTube, give us a follow, subscribe, and you can find all of our audio there as well. It's coming up about a couple episodes every other day. I'm really trying to get through all of them. Please leave us a review if you listen on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and Spotify also has the star rating system. So we're trying to really grow the podcast this year. We want to reach new audiences, and we can only do that with your help. If you guys take the time to leave us those little reviews. It means so much. But I think without further ado, we can finally get into this excellent conclusion to Mistborn, The Final Empire.
Chapter 38. Man, I just love the cinematography that plays in your mind's eye.
Yes.
With this entire last set of chapters. We have Vin making her dramatic approach to Credit Shaw. Now that she had been rescued with Sazed and Ellen, she has her medals restocked, her mist cloak is on, and she's ready for this final encounter.
There's a little moment where she compares her last time at Credit Shaw being bleeding, half awake, running from the Inquisitors, and it's awesome to see her triumphant return, where she can come back and she's got this plan in her mind of how she's finally understanding the 11th medal and how that's the key to destroying the Lord Ruler. We are so excited to see Vin's final attempts as this chapter opens.
The perspective changes. We're in Credit Shaw in the Lord Ruler's chambers now, and we're finally getting a unique perspective from the Steel Inquisitor Carr. He had been granted the Inquisition of Orthodoxy through him, so now the Steel Inquisitors are in charge of everything the Obligators were once in control of.
This is a huge political power move. I'm not sure how it's going to play out in the books moving forward, because obviously everything topples at the end of this book. But there are other Inquisitors out there in the world that aren't the ones that were here in Credit Shaw and in Luthadel. So I'm interested to see how many other Inquisitors are going to come up in later books and what their role is going to be. Because I can totally see them banding together and almost going rogue so that they can stop the new governments from coming in.
Yeah, there's some really interesting world building. We get time away from Luthadel to the other dominances, Ooh. All these other political and power structures in place. And I just really enjoyed how books 2 and 3 expand the world. Without revealing too much, this does definitely lay a foundation for more events to come.
Ooh, okay. One little detail that I appreciate, too, by finally getting the perspective of an Inquisitor is we can see how they actually see the world because their eyes are replaced by spikes, which is obviously
grotesque and scary.
To say the least, for sure. But they have such a power over Allomancy that even when they're steel pushing and pulling almost, they like use their eyes and they get those blue outlines so that they can see all of the trace metals in everything. So it's not vision like a normal person would have it, but they can see everything anyway.
And it's like detail out of like TV static or snow in my mind's eye. It's really cool.
Yeah. And like just like kind of like squiggly lines that outline everything. But they can also almost sense emotions as well through their eyes. Because he's looking at his other Inquisitors thinking they're having these other emotions. He's sensing how tired they are because it's actually very exhausting to be an Inquisitor. Their power sucks up their energy pretty quickly, something like that. And I'm sure you know more than I do. But I like that there's a little weakness built into this moment too of like, oh, they're super powerful, but they can't just...
Their endurance isn't super high. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good balance.
Definitely. So we have this kind of moment as if all has been achieved, all is well, where the Lord Ruler approaches Carr and says, now that you have what you want, I trust that I can have peace in this matter. Kind of this quiet moment of like, yep, all is well. And then finally you just hear, tink. And it was just a coin shooting through the stained glass wall, followed by a dozen more. And then Vin flying through the stained glass window, mist swirling around her, dramatic superhero landing entrance into the Lord Ruler's chambers. She's here to put an end to him, and it's just so awesome.
She comes in so prepared, too, because she lands in this really visually stunning, dramatic way, and then immediately starts running towards the Lord Ruler. And the Inquisitors take a minute to spring into action, so she has the element of surprise. And she burns the 11th medal, so she's starting to put her two plans together. Running towards the Lord Ruler, has this thought of how powerful he was when the spears went through him during his final showdown with Kelsier, and how they didn't even hurt him. And so she burns the 11th medal, sees the other versions of the people, and tries to fight them.
Brilliant strategy, and it ties into the fact that Kelsier kept preaching how the 11th medal was the key to taking down the Lord Ruler. So she truly is trying to follow in his footsteps and honor the plan.
I genuinely thought this was going to work. When she finished the previous chapter and said she had a plan of what to do, I thought that this was really going to be the final moment where it was like, oh, you put the pieces together of who the characters are from those little blurbs in the past. We've connected the dots of who the Lord Ruler is, and we just have to kill him in the past so that, like, he can't be here in the present. Unfortunately, the 11th medal isn't really time travel, so it's not like she's going back in time and killing the Lord Ruler before he can become who he is now.
No, it acts as, like, an ATM shadow equivalent. It's insubstantial, and there's no substance to it. So although Vin had such a clever plan, it doesn't work. And I always imagined, like, if the Lord Ruler knew what she was attempting, or in his mind, he just sees her swiping with obsidian knives at the air and was like, you good? Like,
can you see or something? I'm like, over here.
Yeah, like, just...
You a little dizzy?
Foolish child, you know, just...
I wonder if he knows what she's trying and is not concerned about it because of how powerful and knowledgeable he is. But I'm also not sure because I don't know how much of the mysteries of allomancy he has tapped into. Like, does he know about metals outside of the ones that are commonly dictated, you know, the normal 10 or 12? So it's kind of a funny moment where she's just running and then slicing daggers through nothing from everybody else's perspective. But man, this is so disheartening for Vin because she really thought she had it in the bag. This is essentially the moment where she played her final cards. From her perspective, this is it. There's no coming back from this. She says she has to get out of here and she'll need to come up with a different way to kill him. But this was the closest she's ever gotten. And I think that if she didn't figure out in this scene, like in this very moment, there would be no coming back from this. The Lord Ruler would just kill her.
Yeah, there's no time to retreat and come up with a new game plan. This is all or nothing. And unfortunately, matters become more complicated when Carr, the Steel Inquisitor, gets a hold of Vin and gets her into a grapple lock.
And if they weren't scary enough already, the Lord Ruler reveals that Carr was a soldier in his previous life, so he's probably even more dangerous than the regular Inquisitors.
And a little explanation and lore there that these Inquisitors are made from real people. They're not just... Like, orcs in Middle-earth come out of, like, a pit, you know what I mean?
Right. I hadn't even thought of that. I assumed that they were real people because they look humanoid, but that's a good detail that you need in order to understand what happens in the next couple of paragraphs.
Yes.
But, yeah, he's got Vin in a headlock. She is having trouble breathing. She's gasping for breath. She's watching the mist slowly creep in through the broken windows. One detail that was brought up in the annotations that I didn't even pick up on when reading is that the mists are not curling around her as they normally do because she's next to Carr. Brandon Sanderson says that the mists curl towards Mistborn and away from Inquisitors. I obviously don't know what this is because I haven't read the rest of the books. My guess is that it has something to do with like pushing and pulling of metals, but I am really out on a limb here.
You're on the right track, not in that specific instance, but pushing, pulling as in opposite energies or life forces and things.
Yeah.
And it's very cleverly done when we get more lore in the subsequent books, but this moment of triumph is short-lived as the Lord Ruler beckons for the rest of the Inquisitors to come in and help eliminate Vin.
Ugh. God, my hands got so sweaty at that moment. I was like, it's over.
Yeah.
There's no way she's going to survive this.
Only there are no other Inquisitors to come in.
Ba, ba, ba.
It's just Marsh.
Okay, were you expecting this?
No, this absolutely blew me away. I was happy he was alive, but heartbroken that this became his fate.
Me too. I thought it was a really good twist for a character. I think it works well because it does give a little bit of credence to the Deus Ex Machina savior moment that Vin is experiencing here. Because at first, when the Inquisitor comes up and pulls a spike out of Carr's back, which ends up defeating him, destroying him, I was like...
Literally a linchpin. It's right. Great.
I was like, what the heck is going on? Like, who is this? But it's a character we've been following the entire time, so all the pieces fit together, I thought, really well. But I was devastated to see that that was Marsh's final sacrifice for the cause, having to become an Inquisitor.
There's always another secret.
Man, it's just so... It's pretty gut-wrenching.
Yeah. The Lord Ruler is absolutely taken aback that Carr's now dead, the rest of the Inquisitors are dead, and he's been betrayed, and he's like... I think the line's even, by one of my own, like, he is just so caught off guard by this.
Yeah.
Marsh activates some ferrochemical powers, being a steel Inquisitor, and taps into speed. And
so they do have ferrochemical powers.
Nothing.
I had already guessed that because the spikes are in them. Ha!
Oh, I'm so mad. I'm so mad. I try not to give spoilers. Dang it.
No, I thought that the Inquisitors were made to have all of the powers because Marsh... As I said earlier when you and I were reviewing, Marsh was just a misting. He had one element he could control. And obviously the Inquisitors have all the elements, all the metals, and more. So I knew that there was something else going on.
I'm so mad. I'm sorry.
I'm not mad.
So he flies forward and tries to remove a spike from the Lord Ruler's back as if he was a common Inquisitor. And it turns out he is not. And the Lord Ruler and Marsh get into this great combat sequence. Marsh, being as powerful as he is, doesn't even stand a chance.
Nope.
The Lord Ruler incapacitates him pretty quickly.
Yeah, his head hits the ground and cracks, and he slides all the way across the room, which is a very final battle thing to do.
Oh,
like,
for
just
sure.
Having someone fly and, like, slide across the room and, like, lay in a hump, a lump, a heap. That's the word I'm looking for. I think it's a pretty classic cliche in a final fight, because then it's always that person who gets up later and helps, but I like how powerful it makes the villains look in those moments.
Oh, for sure. And this move is followed up with a really brilliant strategy in the Lord Ruler's part, where he does a very powerful push externally in every direction to remove all metal close by, giving him an advantage and not having Vin access to an anchor or anything close to the Lord Ruler.
Even her mom's earring rips out of her ear, and she finds it later, and I just feel like that little thing is cursed or something. I don't want her to have it back. Makes me nervous for some reason. But even the metals inside her body, she can feel them getting pulled, like they're getting pushed away with all the other metals that the Lord Ruler is sending out of the room. So he's got powers beyond what she can believe. She ends up tapping into some of those a little bit later, which I think is intriguing, because we've already seen her pierce copper clouds, which is something people aren't supposed to be able to do. And I think that during this final battle, we see a lot of the rules of allomancy start to bend in a way that I find satisfying, but I wonder if other readers have found irritating, because it's not following any of the established rules that have already been set up earlier in the book.
No. And so in the subsequent story, there's explanation and lore to back this.
Okay.
But it does feel on the first read for someone who's unfamiliar as a cop-out or a Mary Sue moment for sure.
I don't know. I liked it because I think we can see that the Lord Ruler and the Inquisitors have a lot of powers that regular Mistborn don't. So they are there in the world. And we do see other interactions and iterations with the metals in terms of ferrochemy. So I think it's pretty believable. I think if we don't later get the explanation as to why Vin has some powers, it would start to feel a little strange. But he laid the groundwork for the fact that Vin can do things outside of the established allomantic rules already. I think this works very well for a final chapter.
Definitely.
Because the Lord Ruler's clearly been hiding secrets from everyone.
Well, when you've been around for a millennia and you control the world, obviously you're going to hoard all the knowledge.
Exactly. So I think that's why it works so well here.
Yes.
Even Marsh was fooled. You know, he tried to pull the spike out of Lord Ruler's back, but he doesn't have one. They thought they had come close to guessing his secret, but he's got more secrets.
There's a great scene that happens next where the Lord Ruler is holding up Marsh as if he's ready to kill him, saying, you know, I made you superior to other men. I made you dominant. And then that phrase itself triggers Vin's memory from all the logbooks. And she burns the 11th medal one more time. And she realizes that the Lord Ruler was a Terrace Pac-Man.
Yeah, she recognizes his clothes.
That he's Rashak, the man from the logbook. And there's this mega revelation moment where she realizes this isn't Elendi, it's Rashak. He killed Elendi and took the power at the Well of Ascension for himself. That he's a Terraceman and that he's a ferrochemist.
I loved this revelation. I thought it was so clever. It really tied in those blurbs at the beginnings of the chapters in a way that I found extremely satisfying as a reader, because it wasn't just giving us history in terms of world building. It was actually actively important to this story.
Oh, absolutely. And with this revelation, it's not just, oh, we know his origins. That's great. It gives Vin a strategic edge on how to fight him now. Because she looks at all the jewelry adorned on his hands, wrists, and forearms and says, this isn't just bravado that the Lord Ruler isn't afraid to wear jewelry for fear of allomancers. These are jewelry worn by a Terraceman, things that hold a ferrochemical charge. And so now she has a strategy of how to take him down.
And all this revelation comes at the same moment that outside they start to hear cheering. There's thousands of Ska outside, and Vin imagines that they're cheering her on. And I like that it takes her a few sentences to get to the revelation. You know, she accuses him of being Rashak. She says, you killed the hero, you killed Elendi. But then she flounders for a minute and she's like, oh shit, I have this knowledge, but what can I do with it? Until she pieces together that the metal is something that she can use against him. And she really starts to flare up her iron. She has the two blue lines that point to the bracelets and everything.
Well, the rings. It's everything but the two bracelets that pierce his skin.
Oh, yes, because technically you can't use allomancy on metals that are in people.
But as she's stoking and flaring her iron, she then draws upon the mists and two more allomantic blue lines appear.
And I love that she's pulling so hard that the force of the anchor against this iron pole is like pressing her chest so hard she can't even breathe.
Yeah, so the Lord Ruler is pushing, using a steel push on her and is crushing her. But that's becoming an anchor for her iron pull as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like this extreme, excruciating moment of savage desperation. And she's at her wit's end. And with her one final thought before she loses consciousness, she can't breathe. She thinks, he killed Kelsier. And with like one last dramatic primal pull, the bracelets on the Lord Ruler's wrist fly off. And the power gets released and she can breathe for a moment. The steel push has been stopped and she has a moment to kind of collect her wits.
And then the bracelets, she keeps pushing them, push them away for them, the Lord Ruler.
And I love how it's described. She pushes them out the window that she broke in through. The sun is beginning to rise on the horizon and you see these little glints of gold flicker out the window and into the city.
Yes, yes, yes.
As those fade out into the city skyline, the Lord Ruler dramatically begins to age because those bracelets stored all his youth.
I love the visualization of this. He's deflating in the same way that Sazed's muscles did, but he's also aging. Like, you can see him just withering away. His hair grows white and limp, his back stoops, his skin starts to sag, and he collapses to the floor. And then who shows up but our homie Sazed for the yes! final moments? He runs over to Vin to check on her, gives her a vial of metals, which is awesome because her body is in such pain from her fight. at one moment earlier in the fight, we forgot to mention it, but she had tried to use the Lord Ruler's bracelet as an anchor, and he whipped his arm up in the air and spun her around, and she broke her leg, so she's not doing very well. Sazed gives her the medals to help her recover. She burns them instantly. She says, go help Marsh. Marsh is actually an Inquisitor, stirring. So he can heal super quickly, which we'd seen the other one that Vin had attacked with the arrows do before. And so everyone's kind of doing okay, except for the Lord Ruler. And
he is raisining at a alarming rate.
Yeah, Sazed goes over to him and he's like, I think he's still alive. So just in this great final moment of like, they don't just kill him, but they give him a little talking to, which I think is hilarious. Yeah,
there's definitely justice speeches all around.
But I love it.
The first is from Sazed. Yes. And what better than from one of your own people that you oppressed, saying, you hear that cheering, it's not for you. We have a new hope now. Like, this is the beginning of a new world order.
And then the second little speech is from Marsh, because the Lord Ruler's like, my obligators. And Marsh is like, no, all the other Inquisitors are dead. You put the Inquisitors in charge, so I am the only person left. I rule your church now, and I will see to it that it is destroyed.
So there's no legacy for him left.
Absolutely. So harsh on him in his final moments, which he deserved.
Oh, yeah.
And then Vin finally gets her last little say.
Yes. She says, I bring you a message from a friend of ours. He wanted you to know that he's not dead. He can't be killed. He is hope. And just as the Lord Ruler did to Kelsier, Vin stabs the Lord Ruler directly in the heart with a spear.
I love the imagery of this death, that he's old and feeble, which is really kind of how he has been at heart, absolutely out of touch with everything going on in his empire. He's got the spear in his chest, like you said, the same way Kelsier died, and then Vin and Sazed and Marsh, three people who he had spent his whole life oppressing, standing over him.
And I love the fact that the Lord Ruler is destroyed at such a rock bottom moment. It would be one thing if it was like he was still youthful and strong and handsome and it was like a good match, but no, like physically, mentally, emotionally, he was destroyed. As I just said a moment ago, his legacy is ensured to be destroyed. There's nothing left. Your reign of terror is done.
Yeah, this is not a hero's death. There's no honor in this moment.
Epilogue. The blurb in the beginning of this ending is phenomenal. It talks of Elendi's final evening before going to the Well of Ascension and his trepidations and how tough of a journey it's been and how emotionally and mentally it's impacted him. And there's a line that he says that if he fails, it will go to another. And it ends with like a sense of comfort. All is not lost, and it truly had a successor, and that was Vin all along, even if he didn't know it and we didn't know it.
I like the sense of hope that it provides, because I think that's one thing that is going to come up again throughout the trilogy, and it's just a general theme of life, is that no matter how many times evil is vanquished, and I guess a theme of fantasy as well, the evil continues to come back. And I like this idea that it's not just up to one final person, and that'll be the end-all decider. Even if they do their best and fail, somebody else will come along who has the hope to fight for good. And I guess that's just sort of like a message of life, is that it's always going to be a balance of good and evil, but there will always be people to fight for good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just wistful, and I was also thinking about how much of what you said transpires it.
Yeah, it's like a message directly. For life. That's what I mean. It's not just for the books.
Yeah, it's just good. Well spoken.
Thank you. Oh man, we finally get some good answers in this epilogue and a little nice wrap-ups. Finn is with Sazed at the beginning of this epilogue, and he is talking to Marsh about how he has made this conclusion that the Lord Ruler was both a ferrochemist and an allomancer. And I think that that's a really intriguing combination. And I like how it explains that he had these powers that he did in the previous chapter when he was defeated. But I like that it also indicates to us that he was not an actual god, just a man with a bizarre and intriguing combination of powers that he really worked to his own advantage, but he was just a mortal man.
I enjoy during the annotations that Brendan Sanderson describes, by using both power sets, you have these weird tweaks of magic or glitches in the mainframe that are inexplainable at the moment. We do get more lore and info on it in the subsequent books and trilogies, which is actually really fun to explore both Alamancy and Ferrochemy dynamics. But by being able to store his youth and then draw upon it later, the Lord Ruler was exponentially able to have stores of youth, and to the point where he could remain immortal and young and physically at his prime for millennia.
It's nice that Sazed gives a little explanation too, that he has these attributes that are only available to Ferrochemy, but he can fuel them with Alamancy. And I think that's a nice summation of how the powers can work together. And one thing that I think is really cool and plays into the Lord Ruler as a character is that Sazed is saying that age is an attribute that's definitely usable by Ferrochemists, but they often see it as fairly useless. And the only thing that they've come up with to use it for is a disguise. But because he had this combination where he could endlessly change his youth, he very cleverly took that to his advantage, made himself look immortal, and was able to live extremely long time. And I think the Lord Ruler is seen as evil and oppressive, but I think he's also very, very smart in the way that he has set up this system that serves himself, and in the way that he has combined his powers. Ugh, and in that ominous last line of, you don't know what I do for you. What is he up to? What was he doing? What has he figured out about something in the world? I don't know if he's been keeping off the deepness. I don't know if there's another enemy he's been working with to kind of stave off. But he does see himself as a protector of the Ska in a weird way. So I'm intrigued by what we're going to learn about this in the future.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm not going to say anymore because I know you can't tell me. I just have so many questions about the lore of this world. And again, that's why this works so well as a book that could be a standalone or a series. Because if you're just interested in the overthrowing of the Lord Ruler, great wrap up, great end of this book. Everyone gets a neat little bow and ta-da. But there's so many questions about Alamancy. We've seen it's got more powers than have been presented to us and to the wider world. Vin's got powers we don't know about. The Lord Ruler left that ominous last line. There's questions about how Elend is going to set up the new kingdom, because we find out that he's been made king. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack and explore. A lot for Vin to kind of take in and understand about herself. You know, there's a lot to this world, but Vin's been through so much since the beginning of this book. She's grown and transformed who she is. She's still coming to terms with a lot of aspects about herself, but most importantly, she's learned to trust others and herself a lot more.
That's very true. I like her full circle where she ends up getting Reen's voice back in her head in the epilogue and she finally pushes it away. But I want to talk to that when we get there a little bit, because there's a lot more in this conversation that Vin, Marsh, and Sazed are talking about. They talk about the breeding program that the Lord Ruler had put in and how it had been posed as a way to control the Alamantic lines and the noble lines, but they're starting to look at it more now that they have this knowledge, and they're thinking it's because he didn't want Ferrochemist abilities to cross over with Alamantic abilities and create anyone else who had the same powers as him.
Yeah, it was like very barbaric but strategic on the Lord Ruler's part, where any person of noble blood that bet a Ska were to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And then any terrorist man was
systematically wiped out or sterilized.
Correct. So again, we were thinking about this on individualistic levels.
Right.
In reality, it was to prevent those groups to overlap or procreate.
Very smart the way he lays clues in throughout the book.
Yeah.
It's also revealed, obviously, that the Lord Ruler is definitely dead. We get, like, full confirmation, if we didn't already know, because Vin is questioning how he became so powerful at Allomancy. And she's a little flustered because she apologizes to Sazed that the Lord Ruler was the only person left in the world that they know of who had questions about the missing terrorist religions. And so she feels upset that she took that chance away from Sazed to get that information. But as you said last chapter, he was reasoning very quickly. He was going to die. He was going to die really fast no matter what she did because his age was catching up to him. But yeah, Sazed is still a keeper. He's got work to do in book two.
Yeah, and I love Sazed's character development with what he thinks he needs to do versus what he realizes he must do in those books. And it's great that his work is not done yet. There's much more he can do to help Vin and the world.
Yeah, it's funny though, he wants to record Vin's story so that it's passed on and stored forever, but she does not really like the idea of her story being written down, which I just thought was a funny little breaking of the fourth wall because she's the main character of a book, i.e. her story has been written down.
Yeah, it's literally like, who, me?
I wouldn't want to be in a book. But yeah, he's saying he has other pieces of information to share with his brethren, but also he's got a lot of things he needs to start doing now that the Lord Ruler has toppled.
Theoretically, the Keepers have stored all this knowledge for a millennia in order to re-educate the world.
Right, like their time has come. It is time for them to spring into action and share the knowledge that they have been gathering up.
The Awakening.
There's other conversation elements in this moment where they're talking about Marsh having become an Inquisitor.
And that, unfortunately, it's a very continuously painful process, which sucks. But we also get a very comforting, introspective moment from Marsh where he talks about how this has been such a long road and he's so sad that Kelsier is dead and that he won't forgive him for the fact that Kelsier followed his dream of overtaking the Lord Ruler and starting the rebellion and freeing the world, but he regrets that he had to die to do it. And it's just a really beautiful sentiment that although these brothers were so vastly different that, you know, they had conflicting thoughts and opinions, but at the end of the day, they were still family and loved each other. It was just wholesome, and I really appreciate it.
It's almost a little bit of a tinge of jealousy again. I think Marsh is always jealous of Kelsier, but I think in this moment, there's a true... jealousy's not quite the right word.
But, like, envy that Kelsier died a hero and Marsh is, like, left to live on.
Yeah, and I think especially left to live on in the state that he has to live in now. Being an Inquisitor, like you said, he says it's continuously painful and that the process of becoming one was disturbing and he doesn't even want to talk about it. All he mentions is that there are multiple bodies involved. So that's where I got the idea that maybe they had to combine people who had all the different elements of all the Allomancy into one person somehow so that they could give the Inquisitors mastery over all of the metals, not just one. And he also mentions that the spikes throb. So again, we're getting this sort of like throbbing and pulsing notion related to whatever that pounding or sounds of drums are related to the mist in the Well of Ascension. That's a big mystery for me that I'm intrigued by because it's mentioned.
You're really paying attention. I'm very impressed.
It's mentioned in such passing every time, but like is it a heartbeat? Like, I don't know. I'm intrigued. I have to read more. And then they come to the conversation of the Chondra where we finally get some answers. We had seen the Chondra throughout the book many times. Obviously, Ore Sor was first Lord Renew, and then he took on Kelsier's body. But we also get the information now that Chondra is a grown-up mist wraith. They're all sort of related. And that Kelsier paid for a contract in advance. And these are very expensive. They have to be paid in Atium. And that contract has passed to Vin. So Ore Sor is looking for her. So again, setting up characters moving forward to book two.
Yes. Vin does not like the idea of keeping a Chondra around, especially one that ate and wore Kelsier's skin. It really sets a bad foundation for any type of business, professional, or emotional relationship with a being like this.
Mm-hmm. She's very mistrustful.
However, Sazed really insists that she should keep him around. It'll be a useful ally in the events to come.
I think not only a useful ally, but Orisor knows everything about the plot that they had put together, so you don't want him being bought off by somebody else and spilling secrets or anything about what they had done.
Right, he's too dangerous to release.
Yeah, you don't want to let him slip away.
No, not at all. The conversation does move in a different direction where they now discuss that Elend has been declared king and put on the throne of Luthadel and what's left of this new empire. And Vin kind of laughs at this, where she thinks that Kelsier would have been upset that after all this, we put another nobleman on the throne. But Sazed, of all people, really jumps in to defend Elend, that he was there for his coronation speech, that he spoke with such idealism and really wants the best for the Ska and the nobility and wants to forge a new future that will prosper for everyone. Sazed even says that he wishes he had his metal minds on him to record that speech. It was that inspirational and impactful. So it allows us to think that Elend will rise to the occasion and earn this title and not just be a benefactor of circumstance. That it's not like, oh, he's a nobleman. He's here. He's one of the most powerful noble families that's left. I guess he'll inherit the title. It's no, this is someone that has idealism and cares for everyone and will prove to be a successful leader.
I think it was he got the position because he was the only nobleman left in Luthadel, but not because it was like, oh, he's the only one left here. It was more so like he's the only one that didn't just take his assets and run or hide up and hole away in his keep where he could be just safe and ride it out. Like he got out there. He put himself in danger, put himself in front of the Ska, gave him resources to use during their rebellion. You know, he was very involved, and because he was the only one that stuck around for the problem, I think he's very deserving of this, and he is obviously going to have to rise to the occasion because, as we've seen, he's been kind of beaten down by his dad his whole life and not given a chance to lead. He has a lot of ideas and good theories, but no practical experience. And that's going to be tough for the crew moving forward, too. Kelsier gave them roles in his new government, but they've never actually done this. You know, they've worked really in the shadows, on the sidelines. They're going to be in positions of very public power, and this is going to be a huge transformation for them in the rest of the series.
Oh, for sure. And I love that in the annotations. It said that taking down the Lord Ruler was like the easy part, but to create like a stable and safe world is the true challenge ahead.
Especially because the Lord Ruler is gone, but this is still not a very thriving world. You still have the ash mounts. You still have the fact that the world is pretty barren. It doesn't grow environmentally very strong crops. We can see that the noblemen's do have gardens and like nicer plants, but I think in terms of resources alone, and again, at one point in this conversation, they mentioned that they hadn't even found the ATM stores. They don't have a lot to work with. Tough position to be in.
Oh, for sure. It'll be really interesting to see how the events play out for you. Again, I can't wait for you to just see more of the lore and world building and learn why the world is the way that it is.
I have so many questions and I have been putting off reading this. I cannot wait to learn. Again, I'm so excited. What is the pulsing?
The setting of this world is a character unto itself.
What is the Well of Ascension? Is it a real place? Is it a real well? I don't understand.
The best beverage in town.
Just a little sip of water from the well.
So, as we move on with our characters, Vin is having a moment of introspection on top of Keep Venture, kind of just taking everything in. She's recovered a bit from her injuries with her confrontation with the Lord Ruler, and she's kind of in this juxtaposition now where She hasn't had a chance to even talk or see Ellen since everything that's gone down. And she wants to see him, but she's hesitant. She has this moment of like, who am I? Do I belong? Am I still this street urchin? Am I a Mistborn? Am I Lady Valette still? Like, I don't feel like I'm any one of these, and I don't know if I can be with Ellen. I don't belong.
And she feels guilty, too, because she's looking down at Ellen, and she's thinking how tough his road forward is going to be, and she's thinking she's not the right fit for him. He's going to be a king now. The nobility see him as a puppet. There's lots of politics already swirling around his new kingship. It's going to be really difficult for him to maintain all that. And she's like, if I am not, you know, queen material, what am I doing?
There's this really beautiful and melancholy moment where she has those Rhene voice in her head, you know, saying, you know, she should go to him. And she's like, no, I can't. And then there's this moment of illumination where she realizes during this entire conflict and conversation with Carr that Rhene died to protect her. Despite the torture and all the suffering he endured, he protected Vin. He loved and cared about her despite his poor behavior to her. It was like tough love during a hard time. And it was his attempt to make her strong and resilient in an unforgiving world.
But he never truly betrayed her. He left her because he had to do it to protect her, but there was no betrayal in the true sense of the word.
No, and so this moment acts as a catalyst where she loves Ellen. She wants to be with him, and she can give in to trust that she can let her guard down, and it's worth taking the risk to possibly be betrayed if it means that you have a life well lived. And she goes to Ellen and they have this cute romantic moment. She accuses him of reading too much in front of ladies, just how he did do that when they were first meeting at the balls. And it's just a great full circle moment.
I like it because you and I reviewed this on audiobook, and whoever reads it makes it sound like in that moment, Vin is on the verge of crying, but also a little bit stern, but also maybe laughing a little bit. And it captures the emotion so well of her being nervous to go talk to him and maybe not 100% sure what to say. But I like that it's not this big profession of, Ellen, I love you, or Ellen, I can't be without you. It's just something that is meaningful to them and the origins of their friendship and their relationship about him reading the books. So it just warmed my heart a little bit, and I thought it was a really nice ending.
Yeah, everyone deserves a happy ending, and it's great that Vin could overcome a lot of her emotional character faults at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just leaves us feeling just happy and satisfied that we've overcome so much together.
It's a perfect balance of there's work to be done, we accomplished so much. Things are still kind of dangerous. We have unanswered questions, but a lot of the confusion of the day has been answered. And then there's comfort in the team that you built through this whole endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely awesome.
Loved this ending. Loved the book. I remember when we first read it, I could not put it down. I cannot wait to read the rest.
So that being said, until next time, listeners,
happy reading. Thanks, listeners. If you're looking for more, check us out at fantasticbookspod.com, where we have book reviews, reading list suggestions, merch, and you can even send us a message.
Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at Fantastic Books Pod.
And if you like what you've been hearing, don't forget to leave us a review.
Thanks.
Golden Rise Media.